When graduate student Katrina Brown learned that her ancestors were the biggest slave trading family in U.S. history, she decided to confront that troubling heritage. She and nine of her cousins retraced the path of the slave trade, and Brown chronicled the trip in an award-winning documentary called Traces of the Trade. It premiered in January 2008 at the Sundance Film Festival, and then was broadcast as part of the PBS series Point of View. The film was also recently screened at Tucson's YWCA. Laura Markowitz spoke with Katrina Brown and some of the family members who participated in the project to bring us this story.
Traces of the Trade, a documentary about slavery, opens with scenes from a 4th of July parade. Producer Katrina Brown narrates.
Every year, my family would get together for July 4th in Bristol, Rhode Island. It was a big deal because Bristol boasts the longest running 4th of July parade in the country. My DeWolf ancestors were known as the great folk in Bristol. They were professors and writers, artists and architects, and many Episcopal ministers. I was proud to be related to them. It never occurred to me to ask how we got so established. One day, my grandmother traced back. I was in seminary when I got a booklet in the mail that she wrote for all her grandchildren. She shared our family history. The first DeWolf, Mark Anthony, came to Bristol as a sailor in 1744, and then she wrote, "I haven't stomach enough to describe the ensuing slave trade."
Brown decided to confront the past and to try to make sense of her guilt at being related to slave traders. She invited hundreds of her relatives to journey with her to Ghana and Cuba to investigate the DeWolf's involvement with slavery. Nine cousins ended up going and participating in the documentary. They began in Bristol, Rhode Island. Old documents and interviews with local historians painted an eye-opening picture of the extent of the family's involvement in the trade.
The second generation, which includes James DeWolf, is the generation that really grew the family business, and it operated from roughly 1770 to 1820. They owned the ships, they owned rum distilleries in Bristol, Rhode Island, which made the rum that was taken to the coast of Africa to trade for Africans. They owned a bank and an insurance company to handle the financing of it all. James DeWolf and George DeWolf, who was in the third generation, bought sugar and coffee plantations in Cuba so that they could then, in the case of the sugar cane, molasses came from that, which was then brought up to Bristol to make the rum. There was an auction house owned in Charleston, South Carolina. They owned a textile mill in Rhode Island.
It wasn't just the DeWolfs who profited from slavery. Nearly all of Bristol was invested in some aspect of it, from making barrels for the rum to helping bankroll the trips.
Most people don't learn that the North was primarily responsible for the slave trade in terms of the ships going to Africa. People also don't typically realize that slavery existed in the North as well. So the fact that it was abolished earlier than in the South means that it kind of gets left out of most history books.
The slave trade was officially abolished by the federal government in 1808, yet the laws were barely enforced. The DeWolfs bought and sold slaves right up to the Civil War. James DeWolf, who ran the business from 1769 to the 1820s, became a U.S. senator. When he died in 1837, he was the second richest man in the country.
At the start of this project, my first instinct was to see James DeWolf as a villain.
James DeWolf Perry VI is named after the infamous James DeWolf. He and his parents, Tucsonans Jim and Shirley Perry, are three of the family members who participated in Traces of the Trade.
What I came to understand as we looked more intensely at the history is that almost everyone 200 years ago in the North was going along with slavery, with the slave trade. Rhode Island society would not prosecute them for these crimes. Judges and juries time and again refused to hold them accountable even for breaking the law. To me, this is not about individuals who are able to do something particularly evil. It's about the fact that society as a whole is able to accept things like this. The fact that this was so widely accepted in his society doesn't for a moment excuse what he did. If we see him as someone completely alien to ourselves, as a villain and nothing more, then we're excusing ourselves. I think the implication is that if we'd been there, we would have been one of the good guys. And we know that's not true. Almost everyone around him bought into this, and each and every one of us almost surely would have done the same thing. I think that says something about our moral responsibility in our world today, to look at what our descendants aren't going to understand in our society. What are they going to wonder that we were willing to do or put up with, accept and be a part of, and never question, even though it was right in front of us?
In Ghana, the family toured the slave forts, where their ancestor traded handkerchiefs and rum for human beings. In Cuba, they traipsed around the ruins of the family sugar plantation while they talked about their feelings, scenes where family members process their anger, guilt, and confusion about racism and their white privilege can be hard to watch.
The majority of white Americans would say, I'm not racist, and when cries of racism arise in our culture, we don't identify. We think, that's not me, and it's not anyone I know, so what's the problem? And then we tend to sort of blame the victim, black people, why don't they just get over it? They're just playing the race card and all that. So I felt like there was something to figure out there. In that sense, I wanted the film to be primarily for white Americans, sort of showing us as a family going through our own processes of learning, and hopefully that would shed some light that would be relevant to other white Americans. There's something that shifted for me when I just started hearing black Americans talk about their experiences and how much this history of slavery and the aftermath of slavery, how much it's part of who they are. A black woman said, I think about it every day. I think about it every day.
One of the things Katrina Brown came to see was that even though she wasn't alive when slavery existed, she has benefited from it.
We all want to feel like we got where we got through our own efforts. It takes several generations to build wealth. You know, you get a head start if you're white grandfather benefited from the GI Bill and had access to a home loan, had access to college education. You get certain advantages by virtue of coming here with white skin, even if you really had to struggle and work hard when you got here.
DeWolf family members and producers of Traces of the Trade have participated in discussions with thousands of audience members. The reactions of black people run the gamut, from relief that whites are finally talking about slavery to anger that they had to spend 90 minutes watching a bunch of white people complain about having to grapple with the uncomfortable subject of racism. LaTanya Whitaker, an African-American social worker with the Sunnyside Unified School District, attended a recent screening at the YWCA.
I respect people who are willing to step outside of themselves because I've always had to step outside of myself. I've always been the minority in a lot of communities, in my jobs. And so when I hear different comments, I've always been the one to be okay with educating people because that's how I had to function in my world. I like the fact that the persons who decided to do this were white, and I can respect them for saying, you know, we need to go take a look at our history and what can we do to be participants in helping to support make things better.
Some of Brown's DeWolf relatives are unhappy that she's aired their family history so publicly. They worry about possible lawsuits from descendants of African slaves. Brown's critics also include white supremacists who sent her hate mail. A few in the social justice community have accused Brown of making a career out of being related to slave traders. Katrina Brown says she went into debt to make the film, and she's still paying it off. There will continue to be doubters and skeptics. But at least 10 descendants of the country's biggest slave trader will continue to invite conversation about the legacy of slavery, which they believe is not just African American history, it's every American's history. For Arizona Spotlight, this is Laura Markowitz.